if we look to the answer as to why for so many years we achieved so much, prospered as no other people on earth, it was because here in this land, we unleashed the energy and individual genius of man to a greater extent than has ever been done before. Those who say that we're in a time when there are no heroes, they just don't know where to look. The sloping hills of Arlington National Cemetery, with its row upon row of simple white markers bearing crosses or stars of David, they add up to only a tiny fraction of the price that has been paid for our freedom. As for the enemies of freedom, those who are potential adversaries, they will be reminded that peace is the highest aspiration of the American people. We will negotiate for it, sacrifice for it. We will not surrender for it now or ever. We are Americans.
This is the Bob France Authority on AM 1420. The Answer.
Yes, indeed. Hour number two underway. The final hour of the morning, the final live hour of the week, the final live hour of the month, and yes, the final live hour in the calendar year of our Lord, 2020. Hard to believe. I would like to say that the year flew by. Oftentimes I do say that at the end of the year. This is my 24th year in broadcasting, and sometimes they do. This one dragged interminably so. It was so painful in so many ways. So much time being spent thinking about what we used to be able to do that we were not allowed to do, and that we remain going into 2021 not allowed to do. It is time to take a look at all of that, especially as it pertains to the year in faith and in our society. To do that, we welcome our regular Thursday guest on the this New Year's Eve edition of the Bob France Authority, Dr. Everett Piper. Dr. Piper is many things. He is a former university president. He is a podcast radio host in Oklahoma. He is a best-selling author, and he is a columnist for the Washington Times, and he joins us now on AM 1420, The Answer. Dr. Piper, I don't know if I should say Happy New Year, but how about good riddance to the old one?
Fair enough. And Happy New Year to you. I wish you all God's blessings in the days ahead.
You know, I asked you, normally when you come on, Dr. Piper, and we've done this for the better part of the year of 2020, I'm so glad we started to make this a weekly segment because it's very popular. I know a lot of my listeners look forward to, a very large number of my listeners look forward to hearing you each week, so I'm glad we've been able to do this. Normally, we'll talk about the big stories of the week, particularly, you know, things that you write about in your column for the Times and other things that happen. I want to look at the bigger picture now, at the year of 2020 in faith. I feel like this was a very challenging year. And I want to give you two different perspectives and ask you which one you think is more likely, or maybe it's an, you know, kind of an equal amount of both. I feel like a lot of people lost faith this year, not intentionally. When you're not allowed to go to your services, whatever kind of services you worship in, or you're limited in the number of people who can be in the building, and so therefore you can't go. Or when you go, you cannot participate. I know that in Catholic churches, singing has been forbidden because of the threat of droplets being projected further when you sing than when you speak. I feel like there's a lot of people who broke away from their faith, not intentionally, but they weren't allowed to go. Congregations have shrunken. Contributions to churches have shrunken as well. And I feel like there's a lot of people who may have lost their faith also because of, you know, the depressing time in which we are going through right now with respect to the lockdowns and other ramifications of the pandemic. On the other side, I feel like there's been a lot more people who have turned to prayer and said, you know, because they are talking about sick loved ones, sick family members, or maybe they've lost their jobs. And they don't know where their next meal is coming from. They don't know where their next paycheck is coming from. And they've really turned to God and said, this is in your hands. I need your help. What's more likely in 2020? I feel like there's a lot of both of those things, but those are just two aspects of faith that I kind of see in some strange dichotomy, kind of working at the same time in this country, Dr. Piper, over the course of the last, more over the last 10, 11 months of the calendar year.
Well, you know, in answering your question, I could take the top out and I could say both sides of the coin are accurate. You've described two sides of the same coin, and you can't ignore either. And crisis, and we just got to admit it, we went through a year of crisis. This has been a year of chaos. It's been a year of crisis. It's been a year of government control. It's been a year of deception. It's been a year of scientism. We've talked about that on your program, the difference between scientism and science, and that we've actually started to worship the high priest of scientism, like Anthony Fauci, who's admitted that he's been lying to us about masks and lying to us about the percentages of people that need to get the vaccine for herd immunity. In other words, the guy's a liar. I mean, I could go on and on, but I digress. I'm going down a rabbit trail in a sense. But I say all that to describe the crisis that we all know we've faced. But here's the thing, and I'm a broken record on this because I trust the words of Jesus. I'm a Christian. I don't apologize for that. Everybody listening to me right now knows that. I'm a Christian. I believe that what Jesus says is true. You can take it to the bank. And if Jesus gives us a promise, the promise will be kept. I mean, it has to be. Otherwise, Jesus isn't who we claim he is, and he isn't who he claimed to be, and that is God incarnate walking among us, the Word made flesh and dwelling among us. The creator of the universe condescended to enter into the very creation of his own hand and become a baby that couldn't even reach his tiny little hands up to the heads of the cattle in the stable. That's a G.K. Chesterton reference there. My point is this. Jesus said in the midst of crisis that the gates of hell, the very gates of hell, the worst of all crises in the universe, the gates of hell cannot prevail against his church. So, back to the answer to your question. Are we in crisis? Yes. Will the coming year bring more challenges? I think that's irrefutable. We're going to have to decide as followers of Christ, if indeed that's what you claim, will you rise to the challenge and be faithful as a member of his church because you know you can't lose? Or will you cower in the corner and start worshiping something other than the God you claim to be, the God you claim is indeed the God of Scripture? I believe firmly. Okay.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. I wanted you to follow that last point there. Do you think this is a test? Do you think that God is throwing all of this at us as a test to find out if people are going to turn away from him, turn away from his son, Jesus Christ, and start worshiping the gods of science and the other things that you just mentioned? Because I kind of feel like that sometimes. And I'm not saying that, you know, we're going through 40 days of starvation in the desert and being tempted by the devil. But I mean, I just sometimes you wonder, is God throwing a few things at us at a time right now to find out if we are going to stick with him or not?
Well, basically you're asking a question between God's permissive will and God's sovereign will, his sovereignty. So is God orchestrating this and forcing it upon us, or is he permitting it as a consequence of our own sin and stupidity? It's probably both, okay, because God is sovereign. He is omniscient. He is omnipotent. We know that he's omnipresent. We worship a sovereign God, so we can't somehow pretend that this catches him off guard. Is he orchestrating it as a punishment for our disobedience? I don't know. He could be. There's clearly examples in the Bible where he does do that. His judgment is explicitly focused on those who have disobeyed, and we can't claim that the United States is an obedient country. We're certainly not the model of Christian virtue any longer. In fact, John MacArthur out on the West Coast has said that he's come to the point where he's actually started to pray for persecution because that persecution is needed to purge and to cleanse our culture and our church. So you've asked a question between sovereign will and permissive will, and I would argue that it's probably both.
Dr. Piper, the governmental role in all of this is extraordinarily important, too. Not just, you know, what I talked about with respect to the ability to go to churches with the pandemic restrictions. That is an assault on religious liberty, in my view. You know, the idea that the government can say, yeah, you can have 300 people in a Home Depot, but not in a giant place of worship. That's problematic. But larger than that, what we've seen in 2020 is another attack on faith and on religious liberty in terms of what we are allowed to stand by when it comes to the tenets of our faith and what we must be forced to surrender to, quite frankly, the woke crowd, to the people who feel like their issues are more important than people's issues of faith. And we've talked about countless examples of this, where people are forced to make a choice between their living, perhaps their employment, and their faith. Again, it's all kind of coming together at the same time. Do you feel like that is going to continue to be a threat or a bigger threat in 2021?
Well, you know, what's the biggest story of 2021? Everybody would say COVID right off the top of your head. I might challenge that. I think the biggest story of 2021 is the collapse of the evangelical church. I wrote an article some weeks ago, and I titled it The Church of Holy Wokeness. And that's what the evangelical church has become. It's become politically correct rather than scripturally faithful. We now seem to think that revenge and vice is more important than repentance and virtue. It's a church that preaches affirmation rather than confession. This is not the gospel. This is not the evangel of Jesus Christ. This is not scriptural. And if the church is going to become nothing but a political country club of popularity and follow the crowd rather than confront, rather than be salt, rather than be light, then it will be thrown out and trampled underfoot. Again, the words of Christ. I think the major story of 2021 is the church losing its spine and selling its soul. Now, that sounds negative. I do believe that there's always a remnant, and it's up to us who are determined to be faithful to the Word of God to become that salt and that light, and to do so with courage and recognize that there is a multitude of saints that have gone before us in the stands cheering us on, and we can't lose.
That's very interesting and very well said. The church finding its own way, or finding its own way back, versus, again, what I was talking about in regards to the government, denying churches the opportunity to do that, or denying people the opportunity to practice their faith as they see fit, especially if it's, you know, in air quotes, you know, intrudes upon the rights of others, which is, of course, what the so many legal challenges we have seen in 2020, you know, have brought up. So I do want to talk about that from both sides of that. Let me take a time out now, Dr. Piper. Dr. Everett Piper is our guest. We're looking at 2020, the year in faith, and looking at 2021, what the biggest challenges are going to be for the faithful. And you just heard a huge part of it, the evangelical church, and what it's going to do to right itself, if anything. And we'll be right back on AM 1420, The Answer. Okay, 10:22. We continue now with Dr. Everett Piper, our final conversation of the calendar year of 2020, and we're looking ahead to 2021. And Dr. Piper, you said a few moments ago, I was talking about the challenges of 2021 and how challenges of faith and our freedom to practice our religion, as guaranteed us in the First Amendment, are being challenged by the government. And you said 2021's biggest challenge is still going to remain COVID. And not just the virus itself, but again, the response to and the orders because of the virus. And you mentioned Dr. Fauci in your opening remarks today, too. And you talked about how he admitted to lying. And he did. In an interview with the New York Times, he talked about how we're just going to have to get roughly 60 to 70% of the population to either be vaccinated or develop antibodies by getting the virus to reach herd immunity. Then he said, well, it's more like 85 or 90% when called on it by none other than CNN, believe it or not, CNN's Dana Bash, who said, "Why did you say that?" He admitted it was because the polling of the people who were going to take the vaccine showed only about 50%. He said, "When 50% said they were going to take it, I said we need 70% in order to reach herd immunity. But then when 60% said they were going to take it, now I changed my mind and upped it to 85 to 90%. He admits he is not using science. He is using polling. He is using popularity. He is using his guesstimating ability to come up with answers. And Dr. Piper, that I would have to think is as big of a threat as anything having to do with the virus, because orders are being made, jobs are being lost, businesses are being closed based on this man's medical expertise. He says follow the science, but he admitted he's not following the science. He's following the polls.
Well, and that's another major story of the past year. This lie that the progressives, the left, believe in science more than conservatives. That's not true, because conservatives do believe in science. We want to look at the real statistics. Statistical analysis is science. We want to look at biology. That is science. We argue that women are real. I've talked about that on your show, and that they're not a fabrication. That's a scientific argument. We don't believe that girls should have to run against boys in track. That's based in the scientific difference between the male and the female. So if conservatives would step forward and say, wait a second, we're the ones who want to conserve the time-tested truths that are grounded in analysis, statistics, and science, and the real facts of history rather than this political fabrication of this crap. And Fauci has admitted that the directives that he's giving to our country are grounded in his personal ambition and his personal philosophy, his politics, if you will, more than the statistics that are irrefutable. He's not using irrefutable statistics to tell us whether you have to wear a mask or don't have to wear a mask. In fact, he's flipping all over the place on masks. He lied to us about that. He admits it. Now he's lying to us about vaccination and herd immunity. He's admitting that he's allowing his politics to push that particular communique to the public. Conservatives can win these arguments if we just raise our hand and say, wait a second, I thought we were supposed to be talking about science. We're not being religious, quote unquote, right now. We want to talk about science, so let's do so. So set your politics aside. Let's talk about the real data. If you did that with Gavin Newsom, if you did that with Governor Cuomo, if you did that with Governor Whitmer, if you did that with Fauci, we would win. But we've been lacking in our knowledge or interest and ability to take on the debate in that fashion.
Doctor, I'm glad you answered the way that you did. Let's stay with the vaccine question. Now to go back to faith, and let's go back to the Bible. I'm not qualified to speak on it. You are. You're a biblical scholar. A lot of people see the vaccine, especially if it's mandated to buy or sell, as, you know, the biblical prophecy of you know, taking the chip, the mark of the beast, if you will, whether it be on hand or forehead or whatever the way it's written in the Bible and Revelations. Some are saying forcing you to take the barcode, whether it's on your cell phone or in some other capacity, proving you have been vaccinated in order to buy and sell and engage in commerce in this country or around the world, is an indication of that, you know, beginning of the end times, if you will, from the Bible. I don't know how you stand on that. I know you quote the Bible often. How do you feel about that? And do you think this is, if that's just, you know, a lot of people going a little bit haywire?
I don't think people that are asking those questions are going haywire, because Revelation does speak to this issue very much. And we need to remember that the book of Revelation is Jesus's revelation. It's his direct revelation to the Apostle John that has been passed on to us. This book is revealed by Jesus. And you could argue that all of the Bible is revealed by the second person of the Trinity. But Revelation in particular is titled his revelation. And therefore, when he says that in the end times you won't be able to buy or sell without a mark, I think we need to admit that that's going to happen. Okay, he said it's going to happen, so it's going to happen. Are we there today? I don't know. But what I do know is I get very nervous when the government starts telling you that you have to provide some sort of proof that you have done something, taken a vaccine, for example. Otherwise, you can't buy groceries, or you can't get on an airplane, or you can't engage in normal life.
Right, and it doesn't even have to be the government. It doesn't even have to be the government, doctor. That's kind of, you know, I'm looking at, you know, Revelation 13, 16 to 18 in the line. If they do not have the mark of the beast, they cannot buy or sell. So it doesn't even have to be the government, because we are being, what we are hearing is airlines are making their own minds up, saying if you do not show proof of vaccination, you cannot board. The same thing could happen with subways. The same thing could happen with RTAs, trains, etc. So you can't get from point A to point B to do business, to go for pleasure, for any other number of reasons. That it doesn't have to be governmentally ordered if all of the private sector businesses decide to do the same thing. It essentially is telling you, if you want to live, buy, sell, and engage in this society, you're going to have to take the mark. And in this case, the mark would be the needle in the arm rather than the mark on the right hand or the forehead.
I agree with your concern. And is it the mark of the beast? I'm not going to claim it is, but I'm not going to ignore the parallels. The parallels that you just described are stunningly familiar and stunningly obvious when you read that passage of Revelation that you just cited. And for us to just, for the modern progressive mind to just dismiss that part of Scripture as, well, that was just apocalyptic language for the early church. No. I think that's a huge mistake when we live in a time when we actually see a lot of these things on the forefront. We need to take it seriously.
We absolutely do. Dr. Piper, we're out of time, but I'm going to give you another minute here, if you can, to give us something positive to take into 2021, whether it's in the form of a resolution or in the form of just something to lift us up a little bit. We've all been waiting for the page to turn on 2020, this terrible year. We know there are challenges ahead, as we've discussed for the last 30 minutes, but give us something uplifting to take into 2021, Doctor.
Well, you didn't prime me on this, so hopefully I'll do you justice. I'm going to quote Augustine, okay?
I have faith. It was in my morning. I have faith. I didn't need to prime you on this. I have faith in you.
Okay. My morning reading. This is very brief. I'll do it within your time frame. Augustine, just as we are distinguished by faith, so let us also be distinguished by morals and by works. Let us be on fire. Burn in order not to burn. Be on fire with charity. Whatever vexations you suffer on earth, the fervor of love seeks the height. Augustine, that's a take home. Whatever vexations come before you in the coming months and year, remember, whatever those vexations are that you suffer on earth, your fervor for works and the morals of Jesus Christ, your fervor for the lordship of Christ in your life, your love for him and your love for others seeks the heights of heaven.
I did throw that to you off the cuff, and my faith was not misplaced. I knew you would come through. That is exactly what I wanted to hear. Dr. Everett Piper, thank you so much for that and for all of your wisdom throughout this year, and I look forward to engaging with you on a weekly basis in 2021 as well. Thank you, sir.
Blessings and Happy New Year.
Thank you. That's Dr. Everett Piper. I knew he wouldn't let me down. Even if I didn't have that planned, I knew he'd be able to rise up, and he just did. We'll get news now and your calls to follow on AM 1420, The Answer.
Space where your delicate ears won't be offended. This isn't it. This is the Bob France Authority on AM 1420, The Answer.
All right, it is 10:36. Thank you so much for being with us on AM 1420, The Answer, for our final broadcast of the calendar year, at least live. Yeah, well, period. Final broadcast of the calendar year. Final live broadcast of this week. Tomorrow, New Year's Day, we will have a best of program for you. You're going to hear, if you missed it, you're going to want to hear the full hour that we did about six weeks ago with our friend from the Clarion Project, Ryan Morrow. It's a phenomenal look at what's going on in our colleges and even in our schools as Chinese influence is being spread through billions of dollars in donations to our colleges and universities to gain influence over curriculum. and over policy and over propaganda being spread to your children by the most grave threat that we face in the world today, that this country faces, the Chinese. It's just that simple, the Chinese Communist Party. It's a great interview. It's an hour long. It's eye-opening. You're going to want to hear it. That's part of tomorrow's Best Of show, so make sure you tune in for that. For the rest of this show, I've got two things I want to do as far as positivity, and then I want to take your phone calls, too. Let me get the first one, because I teased it earlier, and I want to deliver. Five great Trump victories in 2020. This comes from PJ Media. I read it last night, and I said I'm going to share this on the radio because it's needed. Number one, we need positivity going into 2020 anyway. And number two, as we put a, you know, put the wraps on this terribly horrible, what's that, what was that book called? The Horrible, Terrible, No Good, Rotten Day. Alex, it's like a kid's book. Well, that was the description of the year. And it wasn't all bad. There were some positives. So I want to share the positivity with you in that regard. And then secondly, this is kind of a tribute to the legacy of President Trump if he is indeed going to be a one-term president. And it looks like it's going to take a miracle on January 6th to save him. So if he's on his way out, I want to do this. Donald Trump's five biggest victories in the year 2020, his final year as president, if it turns out that way. Number one, the March for Life. As Donald Trump became the first sitting president to attend the March for Life in person, and he gave a powerful speech in defense of the unborn. Sadly, the president said the far left actively working to erase our God-given rights, shut down faith-based charities, ban religious believers from the public square, and silence Americans who believe in the sanctity of life. They are coming after me because I'm fighting for you, and we are fighting for those who have no voice. And we will win. That was such a powerful moment to see President Donald Trump at the March for Life, the first sitting president ever to do that. That's a massive accomplishment and, yes, a victory. Number two is the Mount Rushmore speech in defense of American history and American monuments. It was the 4th of July. And we have, you know, we were in the midst of horrible violence after the George Floyd situation in Minneapolis, protests around the country devolving into violent, destructive riots. They're tearing down statues and American icons. And eventually somebody said, when are they going to come for Mount Rushmore? If they're tearing down Washington and Jefferson statues and Lincoln statues, when are they coming for Mount Rushmore? President Trump responded by going to Mount Rushmore and delivering a powerful speech. Make no mistake, he said, the left-wing cultural revolution is designed to overthrow the American revolution. In doing so, they would destroy the very civilization that rescued billions from poverty, disease, violence, and hunger, and lifted humanity to new heights of achievement, discovery, and progress. Our nation, the president said, is witnessing a merciless campaign to wipe out our history, defame our heroes, erase our values, and indoctrinate our children. Angry mobs are trying to tear down statues of our founders, deface our most sacred memorials, and unleash a wave of violent crime in our cities. Make no mistake, he said, this left-wing cultural revolution is designed to overthrow the American Revolution. For the sake of our honor, for the sake of our children, for the sake of our union, we must protect our history, our heritage, and our great heroes. End quote. It was such a powerful speech. He countered the destructive ideology that links the violent riots to the 1619 Project from the New York Times and their attempt to erase America's heritage and find hidden racism behind every aspect of America's founding and its society. It was a huge highlight of the president's presidency, much less the year 2020. Number three, Operation Warp Speed. Under President Trump, the federal government teamed up with companies like Moderna and Pfizer to fast-track a vaccine, whether you agree with taking it or not. This was a remarkable achievement. And for millions who will take it, it's even more so. This was something that was going to take a minimum of 18 months to maybe 2, 3, 4, 5, even some said these kinds of things, vaccine development process, take 8 to 12 years because they have to do long-term studies. This was done in less than a year, 5 times faster than the fastest prior vaccine development in history. And if it does go on to bring an end to this pandemic, I will be one of the first to say, man, I was wrong about that. And I think we should all salute President Trump for getting this done by facilitating this private and public partnership in record time. Number four, the top five biggest victories for President Trump in 2020 that comes to a close now. Amy Coney Barrett. After Justice Ginsburg passed away in September, President Trump nominated a pro-life originalist, Amy Coney Barrett, to replace her. Senate Democrats condemned her for her associations with conservative Christian groups, as they have with other Trump nominees. But the election being so close, they didn't want to alienate all Christians, so they chose instead to attack her on Obamacare. And Trump's nominee, Amy Coney Barrett, deftly responded to the false claims, impressing Americans everywhere by providing cogent and sophisticated answers to complicated legal questions without needing any notes. That famous moment when she held up the blank notepad in front of her, knowing that she was answering all case law questions from her own memory, was just remarkable. She, I think, is the most impressive of the three persons President Trump has put on the Supreme Court in his one term as president. She's remarkable. And finally, last but not least, number five on this list, peace in the Middle East. In January, President Trump ordered an airstrike that killed Iranian General Qasem Soleimani after Iran-backed militias attacked the U.S. embassy in Iraq. Soleimani orchestrated the Islamic Republic's terrorist activity throughout the Middle East and was reportedly responsible for the deaths of hundreds of American soldiers. And the legacy media demonized President Trump for killing him. But it's more than just killing him. Soleimani's death crippled Iran's stranglehold on the Middle East, freeing up Arab states to make peace with the country that Iran considers the little Satan, the Jewish state of Israel. First, Bahrain and the UAE normalized relations with Israel in the Abraham Accords, facilitated by President Trump and his team. Muslim-majority Kosovo and Christian-majority Serbia made a historic agreement that included promises to set up embassies in Jerusalem. Sudan and Morocco also normalized relations with Israel. The UAE even agreed to order hotels to serve kosher food in Abu Dhabi, delivering a powerful symbol of Jewish acceptance in a notoriously anti-Semitic part of the world. These historic diplomatic successes brought Donald Trump multiple Nobel Peace Prize nominations. But, of course, the legacy media largely ignored that. In fact, in a post-election poll, 43.5% of respondents who said they voted for Joe Biden said they had no idea about the Middle East peace accords. 5% of Biden voters said they would have changed their votes had they known. Now, that might seem like a small percentage, 5%, but if 5% of Biden voters had not voted or had switched their votes, Donald Trump would have won the election by an amount that even the cheating wouldn't have been able to stop. So as 2020 comes to a close, it's not all bad. There were some great things that happened, and these are legacy items for Donald Trump, and I think he deserves to be remembered that way if indeed his time as president is at an end. Okay, AC is calling from Cleveland on AM 1420, The Answer. Thanks for your patience there, AC. I wanted to get that good news out. Go right ahead, sir.
Have a healthy new year, Bob.
Thank you. You too.
You talked with Dr. Piper, and you asked this question. Are we being tested? Okay?
Yes.
You will find your answer in the first 14 verses of Matthew 24. Some of the highlights are, it talks about pestilences, wars. Pestilences we know, such as Hong Kong flu, H1N1, Ebola, and now in the forefront, Corona. And there's a lot in these 14 verses, and these first 14 verses occur before the appearance of the Antichrist and before the mark of the beast. And I've studied end time prophecy for over 30 years, and I can prove that to anyone. So there's a lot in here in these 14 verses, and there's more in the rest of the chapter, But it gives you an idea, and again, it'll answer your question as far as are we being tested. And it talks about something in the 14th verse about the end. Now, the end is not necessarily a single day, but it is a period of time. And the end that it's talking about has not happened yet. Okay? And you mentioned about the vaccine possibly being, you know, a lot of people think it's the mark. Well, it's not the mark. But it is a foreshadowing. And
something to prepare people, something to prepare people to take the mark.
Yes.
That's, you know, that I can totally see that. You know, I'm not extraordinarily well versed in this, much less having studied it for 30 years, as you just said you have. But I do and have seen that when a lot of people, and AC, thank you for the call. I'm going to get some other people in here. As we have talked about the masks, which are, you know, the claims of their effectiveness are dubious at best. And outright, you know, non-factual at worst. Many have said, why are they forcing us to do this then? And the answer is because if you will be forced to wear the mask and will shame others who do not wear it, you will also then be forced and will shame others and feel compelled and shame others who do not take the vaccine. And once you start on that slippery slope, it gets much easier to the point where all humanity is going to be forced to take what, you know, many call the mark from the Book of Revelations, the mark of the beast. You've been doing it all along. You wore what we told you to wear. You took the needle we told you to take. You're going to take the chip or the tattoo or the mark or whatever it is going to be as well. And more people will be already trained in that regard. So that's a very, very good point. AC, I thank you for that call. We'll talk more about that in depth, I'm sure, at another time. Todd, in Ward 1, back on AM 1420, The Answer. 2 days in a row, Todd. What's going on, buddy?
I'm around, man. I'm around.
Yes, you are.
I will hardly say Amy Barrett and Neil Gorsuch were victories. However, I will say this. For anybody that paid attention, those are good picks for the Supreme Court. There wasn't really anybody who was paying attention to the facts of what needs to be done in order to pick a good Supreme Court justice would say that these people shouldn't be there. So I'm good with that. I'll give you this too. I don't know.
I'm still going to call it a victory, but okay.
How could they have opposed it? It's victory.
Well, you're right. They couldn't have opposed it, but they tried. They tried to look what they did with Kavanaugh, for crying out loud. If they had not been this close to the election, I guarantee you they would have gone after Amy Coney Barrett as being religiously unfit because they would have claimed she is going to be guided not by the law and the Constitution, but by the Bible, which she so stridently adheres to. And they would have made that a disaster. And they would have absolutely opposed her. They just couldn't in this case because they knew they would have, if they attacked Christianity, a month before the election, it would have cost them big time.
Victories come when there's competition. Well, let's just leave it there. She was a good pick. Joseph Steiner.
But Todd, I'm not going to let that go. Just real super fast, because I know you got more to say here, but real super fast. He could have picked somebody who was quote-unquote less controversial, more centrist, more mainstream, like that. He could have done that, and that would have been a lot easier. I call this a victory because she was going to be polarizing to the left because of what we just talked about, her pro-life views, her strict and strident adherence to her faith, her Catholic faith. You know, that's the thing here. He could have gone an easier route. Instead, he went with somebody who was extraordinarily well qualified, but very, very polarizing to the left, and got it done. And so that's why I call it the victory. Go ahead and take the rest of your time with whatever. What do you got?
Let's agree to this. We're grateful that she's there.
Yes, sir.
Let's agree to that. We're grateful that she's there.
Definitely.
We're grateful that Neil Gorsuch. And I'll get this to him because I could give credit to somebody that I definitely wanted to be removed from office. That be Trump. So he did a good pick on picking Joseph Simon. But the Federal Trade Commission, the author of the Critical Loss Analysis and Economic Practice, and he also did a good job picking Maurice Baker, which is for the court that I actually pay attention to more than the Supreme Court, the International Court of Trade up in New York City. Maurice Baker, a former Navy intelligence officer, and a clean, very clean record. So he's done some good, and I don't have issues with acknowledging that. It's been a good year overall for the population. It's been a year that brought us awareness on three things that I believe everybody should carry into the next fiscal year, because I don't count January 1st as the new year. I just count it as the fiscal year. People should pay attention to this. Be better. You have learned that you need to be better students of your life, present and history. And you have learned that you need to be better students of business in this country, present and history, and government, present and history. These good students of these three things would have probably weathered this well if they were already in general good health, as has most of the population that has caught this.
I think those are great points, Todd. I apologize. I got to jet, though, because I got to get our last break here, and I got to get more callers in. But thank you. Happy New Year to you, good sir. We'll talk to you again in 2021. We'll be right back. I want to give you this on the way out the door, but you know what? Let me squeeze in one more phone call, and then I want to leave you with something that I find very uplifting and inspiring from a place you don't normally expect to be lifted up and inspired by. But let me go to Gail in Mentor, who wants to talk about masks real quick. Gail, you're on the air. Good morning. Go right ahead.
Hi. Happy New Year. Yes, I was calling about masks. This thing has really gotten out of hand. I was in Hyman's, and I was told by a worker that I have my last warning. If I do not have a mask, I am going to be banned from going into Hyman's. And at Mark's, I have a guy following me around, and I said, oh, the brown shirts are after me. He said, we know who you are. So I happened to be on tape at Hyman's and Mark's, and I said to my kids, the next thing is, you're going to see me on a wanted poster in the post office as the 10 most, I don't know, the 10 most unmasked people in the world. I don't know what they're going to do.
Well, you know what, Gail, anyway. Let me say this in response. I hope you beat them to the punch. Beat them to the ban. Don't let them ban you. You ban Heinen's from being in your shopping visitation list, because they don't deserve your money, and they don't deserve your patronage, because that is simply ridiculous. I've got to run, Gail. Thank you. Happy New Year to you as well. I want to leave people with this for the last 2.5 minutes of the show. We all know that Hollywood and the musical realm and athletes, the far left in all of, you know, dominates in all of those arenas. You don't expect to hear positivity, and you don't expect to hear conservative ideals coming from any of those areas. But we found it in the music world. Eric Clapton, the legend Eric Clapton, and Van Morrison, another legendary musician, collaborated together and put this gem out just before the end of the year. It's in response to the lockdowns. It's in response to the police state that we are all enduring because of the pandemic and the orders that arise from it. It's called Stand and Deliver, written by Van Morrison, performed by Eric Clapton, and this will be the last thing you hear from the Bob France Authority in the year 2020. God bless.
What's it worth? You know they're gonna grind us down. chilling really hurts.